Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll look at the future of the radio sector and hear why Whoop is the wearable of choice for athletes. Also, later on in the show, we'll take a closer look at the settlement of the long-running saga at Web Summit, and I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. You can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. I also have some recommendations for you. I've been binging on quite a few podcasts and upped my reading game over the last few days. So I'll have those for you a little bit later on. But I want to start this week with something that may seem to be a little bit inside baseball. It's going to be a radio person talking about the radio industry on radio. I've been working in radio since I was 19, so what's that, 17 years now. I started here in News Talk as an intern, and during that time I have seen a massive shift in how we do things, why we do things, and where we do things. Social media and podcasting and a myriad of other issues have come along and created plenty of opportunities as well as some challenges for the sector. But earlier this week, Radio Days Ireland took place in the Gibson Hotel in Dublin. This is an event that takes place every 2 years, and it is the bringing together of brilliant brains from the radio industry to talk about the present and the future of the sector. I was down there to host a panel on AI, surprisingly enough, and I'm going to tell you about that in a few minutes' time. But first, I want to bring you my conversation with Michael Kelly, who is the chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland, who gave me a rundown on the big questions facing the sector. But I started by asking him to give us an overview of Radio Days.
Radio Days is an opportunity for the industry in Ireland to really profile how bright, innovative and energetic it is, but it's also a chance to show the challenges that the sector undoubtedly faces, and also to correct some of the misapprehensions that people may have out there about radio, because really it's such a powerful medium, and I don't think we talk it up as much as we should. If you were to look at radio in Ireland, 80% of people would listen to radio in the past week. Over 70% would have listened to it yesterday. And of that, the independent sector, which I represent, would have 70% combined across all of the country. In some counties, we have 65% share, even for one individual station. And the big thing that we provide is trust. And we were just doing a session just now in relation to advertising. And there's a lot of evidence that shows if you're placing an ad, you want to place it on a medium where people are going to trust it, really, and they will really believe that even the medium is actually something they should have confidence in. And in the radio business, we have 74% trust amongst our listeners. Whereas if you go to the social media and web companies, it's less than a third of that. So we have a huge pluses in terms of the number of people who daily make us part of their lives. They use us to wake up, they use us to have a bit of a laugh, have a bit of banter, or to find out what's going on. But we also have this really high level where they know that because we put an awful lot of effort into the content that we produce, that they can actually rely on it. That's very different to something that they may encounter on the website, where they could have, by accident, they could happen upon something that's toxic or objectionable, or just something that they can't trust, something that absolutely you couldn't believe no matter what.
You mentioned the word trust there, and it's so important. We saw during the pandemic that an awful lot of people turned to radio for information, accurate information, without the noise, but still getting the bit of crack, entertainment and all the rest alongside it. There had been this narrative that, you know, this industry will be squashed by the likes of the big streamers, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Why do you think Irish audiences in particular, you know, stick with traditional radio?
I think Irish audiences love the companionship. They like the familiarity which they have with all of the presenters and all of the stations. They know what to expect. Mm. And because of that, they know, if I know that I was never let down by this particular station, that they always provided really good levels of information or entertainment to me, well, then I'm likely to come back to those. Mm. And that has resulted in a situation where, I suppose, aside from maybe Germany and Belgium, we have the highest levels of audience participation and audiences listening in. Mm. And really that's because the love affair that Irish people have with radio is so strong. I suppose, as Minister Patrick O'Donovan said yesterday, we're quite a nosy people.
Yep.
We like to know what's going on, either in the parish or in the club or in the country. And that means that we actually listen in. We pay a lot more attention to information on the media than perhaps other countries do. I suppose the advantage of being a smaller country means that we have the trust in somebody who has maybe the exact accent that I have. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't want to hear a Dublin accent like mine. But you will trust the actual presenter, who is somebody like Tommy Maron or Paul Claffey or any of our other presenters around the country. You know who they are, and you believe what they're saying. You enjoy the banter and the companionship and the crack that you can have on radio. It's an amazingly personal media, even more so than perhaps the mediums that we all participate in on our mobile phones. You really feel, and I always, when I'm talking to some of the presenters, they always feel that they're actually communicating with one person. Mm. So it's very personal what they're trying to do. So the result of that has been that we have a really strong, vibrant medium. Now, there are setbacks and there are challenges. It's hard to believe how quickly the economic model for radio has been overturned by the advent of web and social media. Mm. Now, what that has meant is that, just to give you an idea, if you looked at advertising that, say, the newspapers get, that's about 70 million a year. If you look at television, it's about 225 million a year. And if you look at radio, probably 155, 160 million a year. But then if you go to the social media giants, 880 million euro of advertising is coming out of the Irish market and going to those companies. Now, certainly I'm not going to try and be anti-competitive and say they shouldn't be able to receive advertising revenue. Mm. But I do believe they should have to put something back to earn that revenue. Mm. And unfortunately at the moment what they're doing is they're not doing fact-checking, they're not doing monitoring, they're trying to retreat from all of those things. And of course they're not covered by the same sort of restrictions that we're covered by in the trusted media. Say, for instance, any of our news editors in our stations, they are extremely rigorous in deciding what they're going to put on. The dilemmas that they face every day and the agonising that they put into deciding whether they put one particular item on or not, that's a big thing that they engage in, and that happens multiple times a day in every station. They also are very aware that in our sector we're regulated, we're covered by the laws of libel. We can't put on, and we would never believe that we should put on, information that is untrue or harmful, because we actually have a responsibility to protect the listener. Whereas in contrast to that, there's this model in the social media where they don't consider themselves publishers, and the result of that is that they don't feel that they are covered by the strictures and the restrictions that we are all the rest of us are covered by. Mm. And there's an argument to make that people who put posts on social media perhaps should get paid for it. Mm. Maybe people who put material up on social media are actually contributors rather than participants in that medium. Mm. Maybe that's one change that could be introduced. The other big change that I really have been pushing hard for is news and current affairs. Now, I'm coming from a commercial sector, so I'm never going to argue that we need support for music or entertainment or all of those really good services that we provide, but that are easy to cover with the revenue that we get. But news and current affairs is always going to be very time-intensive and resource-intensive. In other words, it's going to be expensive. Now, it should be expensive, because if we were doing our jobs right, it should be expensive. But that's the only piece that I think we need support for in the current arena and the current environment. And we have seen, and I've never argued that, say, RTE should never receive funding. I've actually backed them receiving funding. But for a level playing field, which is really what we're looking for, we want the regulatory playing field to be level, but we also believe that there is a case for the public good, which is presented by news and current affairs and balanced and fair news being supported, not wholly supported. We're not looking for handouts. We're just looking for a help up.
Yeah, that was Michael Kelly of the IBI speaking about the reality of working in the radio sector in Ireland in 2025. As I mentioned at the start, I've been working in this industry for 16, maybe 17 years now, and I've seen a lot of change come. But as I mentioned to Michael, the pandemic was one of those times where we saw, you know, people turn towards radio for information and companionship and all the rest. But as we've spoken about on this show, very much so in recent weeks, there's the importance of accurate and trusted information sources. And I was down there myself to host a panel discussion on AI. And it was fascinating because there's a few different assets to artificial intelligence in this sector. Obviously, one big part of radio is what you're listening to right now, which is people talking. And then there's the whole host of people who work behind the scenes. And AI, like with any other sector, it has the potential to be a real disruptor. It can cut down on time in terms of admin tasks. But there's also a lot of rules and regulations in place and also needed on a company by company basis when it comes to AI produced content going out into the world. So, for example, I can't use AI to do this entire show and put it out and not have any human interaction, oversight, production. That just would not happen. But the panel that I had, it was Glenn Mulcahy, Joanne Sweeney and James Cridland. And it was just fascinating to hear their different insights about the benefits, but also where you need to watch from an ethical point of view, an editorial point of view, and also then just a transparency point of view as well. James actually gave some really good examples of TV and radio stations where AI presenters are already being used. The same with voice clones as well. And so there's a massive amount of potential as to where this could all go. But I would love to know your thoughts. Would you be able to identify the voice of a voice cloned presenter? Would you know for sure if it was the person or not? You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. I just found it utterly fascinating for a few reasons, not only because it's where I work, but also the technological capabilities as well. So as I said, I would love to know your thoughts. Techtalk@newstalk.com is the place to get me. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll hear why Whoop is the wearable of choice for athletes.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, we're going to focus in on something that I have mentioned quite a bit on this program and indeed on Pat Kenny over the last number of months, and that is Whoop. I am a big wearable fan. I think I've worn a smartwatch of some description on my wrist every day for the last 8 years. But before Christmas, I made the decision to ditch the smartwatch and move to Whoop. Now, full transparency, I got a Whoop, I think maybe 4 or 5 years ago for the first time. I wore it for a while, but then I ditched it because I didn't understand the data it was giving me. I was frustrated by my inability to reach the targets that it was giving me. And I much preferred getting fireworks on my wrist from another wearable, a smartwatch, when I hit 10,000 steps. Whoop is something that is entirely different, and I have moved back to it as of, I think, November of last year. I've been wearing it consistently, and I am finally in a position where I understand the data and I've received true benefit from it. I have been a bad sleeper for the last number of years, but Whoop has helped me get my sleep back on track. It's helping me with my training. I just absolutely would be lost without it. And joining me now to explain how exactly it works is Brian Curtin, who is the VP of Global Marketing at Whoop. Brian, it's great to have you on the show. Before we get into the nitty gritty, just set out the stall. What exactly is Whoop?
Sure. So Whoop is a health and fitness coach. It's a wearable health and fitness coach on a mission to unlock human performance. We track key physiological data like heart rate, blood oxygen, respiratory rate, heart rate variability. But we aim to serve our members with actionable guidance and coaching to help achieve your health and fitness goals.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the key point of difference. I mentioned this to you before we came on air, but you know, when I started wearing Whoop a number of years ago, I had it on my right wrist, and on my left wrist was a smartwatch, and my smartwatch would give me, you know, fireworks when I hit 10,000 steps. And Whoop sometimes would say that my recovery rate was quite low and my strain wasn't, you know, where it should be. And I guess I didn't fully understand and appreciate what that data meant and also how I could impact it. So can you just explain those two key metrics? So the strain and then the recovery.
Yeah, I can, of course. So, I mean, I think it's a problem in the industry at large that there's so much data tracked from these wearable devices, but consumers don't know what to do with the data because data without insight, it's just numbers. Our focus is about taking that data and providing actionable insights and guidance, not just displaying that data. So the three, the core pillars of Whoop is strain, which is a measure of your cardiovascular output, recovery, which is a read on how ready your body is to perform in any given day, sleep, which is exactly what it says in the tin. It is a measure of not just how long you're sleeping, but also critically a read on the quality of the sleep you're getting. And then stress, one of the newer features on Whoop. It measures and distinguishes between physiological stress and that physical strain. So it helps users understand their body's response to different stressors. And we also offer some stress relieving interventions like breathwork protocol, etc. But the personalized nature of the product is one of the things that really helps us stand out versus the competition or the competitors in the market. Measuring people against arbitrary numbers like 10,000 steps, etc., is can be motivational in the short term, but what we find is members aren't achieving their health and fitness goals in the longer term. People are wearing these things for months and eventually they look in the places that matter to them, whether it be the mirror, the scales, the bike, your PB time, whatever it is. And they're kind of the same person as they were when they put it on first day. Whoop doesn't measure you against a random number. The first 30 days experience on Whoop is all about calibrating the data to the individual member. So actually the first 7 days you get very little from Whoop as the system really reads where your baselines are. And it's not until 30 days in where you're getting the full Whoop experience. It's benchmarking you against you so that when you wake up from a night's sleep or after a couple of hours exercise, we're giving people a score in terms of how you're performing versus your own body. A story I was only telling recently, one of the guys in the team, he's an inter-county footballer for County Meath. And Jess, this guy's a tank in his mid-20s, right? And you're talking to early 40s dad bod central here, right? If we both went out and did a 5K run, for Ronan, he'd go out and he does that before breakfast and he's only warming up. But for me, I'll be honest, it's a pretty good workout. And so if I was wearing another competitor's product, it would tell me I ran 5K and I did a certain number of steps and I did it at a certain pace. But Ronan will get the exact same data. In fact, he's probably ran it faster than I have, right? But the thing that really matters to us in terms of helping people unlock their best selves, it for me, it would tell me that I've had a good workout, whereas Ronan is only warming up at that point. So really personalizing that data to the individual so that we can help guide people whether they want to sleep better or manage their stress or lose weight or, you know, get fit or whatever it is. The core of that is benchmarking against themselves so that we can give people a coaching based off of individualized insights and data.
Yeah, and from my own experience, what I found is that now that I understand the data that bit more, I find it more beneficial. And also, I was sort of thinking about what's the why. So what is my why for wearing Whoop? And what I've come down to is it's not necessarily about weight or movement or anything like that. It's more just about helping me listen to my body because I'm not great at that. I can keep going and keep going. If something needs to be done, I'll get it done. But I find when the data is given to me on the app, but also when the AI coach gives me tips and tricks to best either mind myself or push myself, it's almost that tap on the shoulder saying, listen, you overdid it yesterday. You were on the go all day. Why not take it a bit easier? So it's not always about, you know, pushing yourself to get that bit further. And I actually find that more encouraging and I'm more inclined then to listen to the good and the bad because I do feel it's a bit more mindful.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the origin story is pretty interesting. Our founder and CEO, Will, developed Whoop, or he actually says he didn't realize he was starting a company at the time, but he was a serious athlete at college, and he tried the wearables at the time. We're talking 2012 now at this point. You think it's pretty early days in wearables. But he had a problem with overtraining. He was wearing wearables and it was counting what he was doing. But what he recognized was that there was nothing in the market really giving people a steer as to how their body was in terms of whether it's a day to push yourself, as you say, or it's a day actually you should take it easy and maybe hit the sauna for 20 minutes if you can. That idea of being able to understand your body is the core use case of Whoop. And then, you know, it's applied to the individual depending on their own goals. Whoop Coach, you mentioned the AI component. That's an interesting innovation in the last 12 or so months. It's a first of its kind partnership with OpenAI or ChatGPT, as most people will know it. And it's a conversational experience built into the app. Really meets members where they are on their health and fitness journey, and it allows members like you and I to ask questions and get tips and create workout schedules and nutrition guidance and things like that, all from that data. So it's all about making sense of the data and being able to serve better guidance to the individual depending on their own goals.
Yeah, I love that it's using the ChatGPT or OpenAI technology because it understands the context of my question. So if I get my summary of, you know, like today, for example, I didn't sleep great last night. I had a busy day yesterday, so my recovery is down. And so it gave me my summary. But then I went back and said, OK, so what do I need? Like, how can I improve my resting heart rate for the day or whatever it might be? And it understands the context in which I'm asking the question rather than me saying, you know, my resting heart rate is X. How do I get it to Y? It's just a very natural way to interact with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more data you feed in, the more insightful the answers will be back to you. So one of our other features called the journal, it creates a feature within the app when you opt in where you indicate behavioral choices that you make every single day. So there's a huge list of options where you basically select your whether it be nutrition in terms of X and Y supplements, or if you've had alcohol or traveled on a plane or slept in your own bed, use an eye mask. There's hundreds of these options that you choose the ones relevant to you. And then every day when you wake up, you do a simple yes, no, as mm-hmm. to yes, I took that supplement. Yes, I did an ice bath or whatever it is, or drank alcohol. And it begins to serve you back insights based around those choices that you make. So So the first thing that people instantly recognize is just how bad alcohol is for you. Mm-hmm. So, it's very clear that it's poison, right? Because it tanks your recovery. And you see that in terms of the impacts to your sleep quality and your recovery. And Whoop feeds that back to you, because effectively when you put those, when you add those inputs into your Whoop data, the correlations happen behind in terms of when you make these choices, this happens to you. And so, you know, it helps members identify those behaviors, whether it be your eye mask, your sleep mask, or a supplement. And it begins to guide you through your physiological data as to what the impact is on your body. And so it helps our members create protocols to help you be ready when you want to perform. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting to me is that back in 2012, when Will came up with the original concept of Whoop, he was really building a product with the aim of having it as high a quality a product as possible. So such high quality, he wanted the best in the world to wear it. And so he created this product in the early days for professional athletes. And it worked. You know, in the first 100 athletes, LeBron James and Michael Phelps were in there wearing the product, and really validated those early moves, I guess, from a product perspective. But over the course of time, what we've recognized, or what the business recognized, is the features and benefits that the world's best athletes enjoyed out of Whoop were just as applicable to an everyday person, not just aspiring athletes and young athletes, but actually executives. I'll be honest, me as a dad, I'm a better dad when I'm in the green. I'm a better professional when I'm in the green. I'm a better leader to my team when I'm in the green. And so being empowered to make the choices, whether it be my sleep protocol or, you know, drinking less alcohol or training at the right time of the day, enabling me to be ready to perform on the days that I want to, it enables me to get the most out of life.
Yeah. And what I love about it, though, as well, is that although this might sound zero crack for people who've never tried it, even if you do go out on a Saturday night and you have a few drinks, the AI coach will explain to you what you need to do to get back on track. And, you know, it'll tell you to drink a bit of water, to make sure you're getting plenty of sleep. And so there's always a road back. It's not a case of, oh, well, you've done it now, you're goosed for life. It's that thing of educating you on a day-to-day basis, depending on lifestyle factors. I wore it when I was in America recently, and obviously with time zone shifts and all the rest, it completely put my body out of kilter. And although I felt fine, Whoop was telling me that, you know, give yourself a bit, like, pace yourself back in, because your body clock is a bit all over the shop, and so on and so forth. And it's that education piece that I think really makes this stand out from other wearables that I've tried, anyway, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Whether it be after a night out with your friends, or the great use case you just referenced there, intercontinental travel, especially, you know, jet lag is really challenging to people, and having an understanding as to, well, maybe you do need to sleep that bit longer, or, you know, other guidance that comes with it, you know, helps you recover as quickly as possible and bounce back to be at your best.
Can you just explain how the model works from, you know, a signing up point of view? Because again, in comparison to other wearables, when you go out, you can buy one off the shelf, and that's the extent of it. Once you've paid your money, you've paid your money. How does the pricing model with Whoop work?
Sure. So another key differentiator is our business model. So it is a subscription, and there's varying options you can sign up for. You can sign up just a rolling monthly, which comes in at 30 euro a month, or you can pay 12 months up front for 264. We also, by the way, have a free 30-day trial, because we know that you know, people don't really get it until they try it. And when they try it and they see the benefit of it, we really believe that people will see the value in the investment that they're making in themselves. If you don't like it after 30 days, you can send it back, no questions asked. But the most powerful thing, Jess, about the subscription model is it fundamentally changes our relationship as a business with our members, because it's no longer the case that we just, you know, get the new product out the door and we sell as many as possible and we move on to the next thing. Because we're a subscription, we have to be continually innovating and introducing new features like Coach, like Stress Monitor, that didn't exist when the Whoop 4.0 came out, because we have to fight for people's loyalty on an ongoing basis. And it completely changes the relationship, I guess, that our product team have and the need for us to continually serve value to the members, because people have a choice at every point that they can choose to move on to something else or take it off their wrist. I think that there's a really interesting cultural difference within Whoop, really putting the member, we don't even call them consumers, the members at the heart of the decisions that we make.
Yeah, that's something that I have really noted, in that I haven't changed the physical sensor part. Now I've got a few of the straps and I like to change the straps depending on whether I'm, you know, going for a run or if I'm going out for dinner or whatever it is. I like being able to change the straps so it looks as inconspicuous as possible, or it's one of those nice sports straps so it doesn't get sweaty and gross. But I do like that the device just works and it's the software that changes rather than the hardware.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the product. You know, the thing in your wrist, the hardware is really just a sensor. It's designed, you know, it's one of the other key differences that people spot straight away is there is no screen. You know, we believe in minimizing distractions and encouraging a mindful approach to wellness. This is all about collecting accurate data to feed the experience within the app that can then serve you those actionable insights that we mentioned earlier.
Mm. My final question is Whoop just for those who either like me are trying to build up their running or are professional athletes or athletes, or is it a good companion device for somebody who wants to get better insights and understanding into their overall health and make those gradual improvements?
It definitely started as a product for people that are serious athletes. Since the start of the business and as the value proposition changed and the features evolved, there is huge amount of value within the product for people that want to understand their body better and, you know, we say unlock their potential. I really mean it when I say that I, as a professional, as a leader within my business, or even just as a dad, when I am in the green, when my metrics are positive, I show up better, both physically but mentally. I'm more present. I'm clear thought, and it has, you know, enabled me as a someone that's definitely not an aspiring athlete or a professional athlete, to unlock, I guess, my best potential. The, you know, Whoop isn't for everybody, and I think that's okay. I think if you're somebody who needs to, you know, be motivated to get up and maybe you're starting, your ultimate goal is a 5K. I think there's other ways to be motivated and get up and move. I think Whoop is for people that are really aiming to unlock their full potential, whether it be physiologically or mentally. I think it's ultimately for people that are motivated and want to understand as much as they can about their body and the relationship between decisions that they make in their lifestyle and their sleeping habits, etc., and really understand their body so that they can live to their best potential.
Yeah, that was Breon Curtin, VP of Global Marketing at Whoop. And as Breon said there, it's not for everyone. I know it's not for everyone. I know that some people just wouldn't get the benefit of it, and there's no point in paying because it is quite expensive for the subscription if you're not training for something. Personally, I am training, as I've mentioned numerous times. I am now training for the VHI Women's Mini Marathon in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. And there are days where Whoop will tell me it's a good day for a long run, or as you may be able to hear from my annoying voice, I've been under the weather the last few days, so it's been telling me to prioritise rest and recovery rather than exercise and all the rest. So from my end, I have found it very, very beneficial. Speaking of the mini marathon in aid of Dublin Rape Crisis Centre, a huge thank you to those of you who donated over the last number of days. We are already at €250, which is fantastic. We are well on our way to meet our €2,000 goal. If you would like to donate, no matter how big or small, it would be fantastic. You can head to idonate.ie/run4DRCC. As I said last week, any donation at all, big or small, would be most appreciated. Right, when we come back here at News Talk, we'll look at the settlement in the long-running dispute at Web Summit.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Every week, I like to bring you a few recommendations of things that have made my heart happy. And this week, I am so excited to talk about this podcast. It is called Good Hang by Amy Poehler.
All right, we're going to officially start.
And begin.
And we need everyone to clap.
Personality on. It's not working.
We just need a clap. We need you to clap and then count backwards from 10.
10.
Tina, thank you for being on the first official podcast that I have ever done for Good Hang.
It is my absolute pleasure.
I really, really appreciate it, buddy. You have done many things for me over the years, including getting most of the jobs that I helping me get most of the jobs that I have and the career that I have. But this means the most.
Sure. This means the most? Okay, great.
Yeah, that's a clip of Amy Poehler and Tina Fey in conversation on Amy Poehler's new podcast called Good Hang. I am a huge fan of Amy Poehler. I read her book, it's called Yes Please, a number of years ago, and it's one of my favourite books. I go back to it time and again. She writes, obviously enough, incredibly well. She's, obviously enough, very, very funny. But there's some really good life lessons that I took from that book. The biggest one being, good for them, not for me. So Amy talks about growing up and, you know, in her adulthood and learning not to be jealous of people and not to have that FOMO feeling. And so rather than looking at people going, ooh, I want that, what you do is you look and you say, good for them, but not for me. And that is, as I said, a lesson that I've taken. But I've listened to the three episodes that are out already of this podcast. She has interviewed Tina Fey, Martin Short and Rashida Jones, three excellent, you know, stalwarts of comedy in America and indeed around the world. They are lovely conversations. There is bits that are serious. There are bits that are silly. And I, as I said, I can't get enough of Amy Poehler. So I would highly recommend it. The book that I'm reading at the moment, I asked for recommendations a little while ago. And I stumbled upon a book myself that I want to tell you about. It's by Christy Tate and it's called Group: How One Therapist and a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life. And it is a memoir again, but it tells the story of Christy growing up in her 20s. She was battling an eating disorder. She also had a series of other issues as well that only really came to light and began to get resolved when she started in group therapy. There's a lot of light and shade, to use that phrase. Some very, very dark themes in the book. But she deals with it in a very practical, no-nonsense way. I laughed out loud quite a few times while reading this book. It was originally published in 2020, but I would highly recommend it. If you're looking for something that is entertaining and informative, But also, again, that gives you something to walk away with and think about afterwards. I would highly recommend it again. It's called Group: How One Therapist and a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life. As always, if you have any recommendations for me, I would love to hear from you. You can email techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, we're going to talk about this.
We are delighted to have finally removed these two individuals as minority shareholders. Our agreement vindicates everything Web Summit has done to protect its interests and stand up for its principles. It's heartening that David Kelly and Dara Hickey have recognised publicly what we have known for years, that them leaving the company as shareholders is in Web Summit's best interests. It's gratifying that every single one of the claims made against me or the company has been withdrawn. And crucially, David and Dara have finally publicly accepted that I, and I alone, founded Web Summit in 2009, contrary to their claims over many years. My tweets and posts about the individuals concerned remain online for all to see because they're true. Hopefully they'll also serve as a cautionary tale to others in business, in particular in Ireland. Thankfully though, we have an amazing team at Web Summit. Now we can once again focus wholly on growing our position and reputation as the world's premier tech conference.
Yeah, that was Paddy Cosgrave speaking on Thursday after the long-standing legal dispute between himself, David Kelly, and Dara Hickey was settled. The High Court was informed that the five lawsuits involving allegations of shareholder oppression, breaches of fiduciary duty, and financial misconduct have been resolved satisfactorily. The settlement marks the end of a bitter legal battle that had been ongoing for several years, and the resolution now allows all of the parties to move forward and to focus on their future endeavours. Elsewhere in the world of tech news this week, Fianna Fáil TD Malcolm Byrne put forward a new bill to criminalise AI impersonation, aka deepfakes. He spoke to my colleague Shane Beattie on Breakfast Briefing on Wednesday.
It's not quite a case that we're looking to ban all deepfakes. I mean, some deepfakes are humorous and amusing, and that's it's certainly not the intention, or if you like, it's used for those sorts of purposes. But what we are seeking to address is a situation whereby those things which are actually really important to all of us, our voice, our image, our likeness, where they are used without our permission by another individual for the purposes of trying to give the impression that you are promoting an event or selling something or expressing a political view. So for instance, Shane, your listeners are listening to you. They're trusting your voice. They're trusting that the information that you provide to us is based on good research carried out by your research team. But if somebody then uses that which is most important to your work, your voice, and the technology is there now that by simply listening to your voice for a matter of seconds, it can pick up its tone and its texture, and it can replicate your voice. And if it then uses what seems to be your voice to go off and to try to promote a product or a service, or to seek to gain financial advantage, or to do you harm in some way, then our view is, as part of this legislation, it should become a standalone offence.
Some people think this might be a wee bit heavy-handed. Like, a lot of deep fakes are just a bit of crack. We know of the Pope looking like a cool gangster, or even Vladimir Zelensky was in the White House recently and you had images there of Trump throwing Zelensky around the Oval Office. Not that pleasant, but hardly that serious.
No, and this legislation doesn't impact on any of those that are parodies or whatever, which are clearly intended to be a bit of fun. This is where somebody develops a deep fake, for the most part for either commercial or political gain, where their intention is very clearly to do harm, and where they do it without the individual's express permission. So yeah, the image of the Pope in the puffer jacket, it's funny. That's not going to be impacted by this. But if, for instance, the Pope's image was suddenly to be used to start to sell a particular product or to endorse a particular event without his permission, then it would cover those sorts of situations.
As a standalone offence. Okay.
Yeah, that was Malcolm Byrne TD speaking to Shane Beattie on Wednesday's Breakfast Briefing. The implications of deepfakes, I mean, you might think it's a bit frivolous. You might think the Pope example is just one example. How disruptive could it be? But I think what we're going to see, and I kind of alluded to it during the panel discussion at Radio Days that we talked about earlier on in the show, there's massive potential for this technology to be misused and abused. And I think when we start to see more voice cloning technology becoming mainstream, people purporting to be family members, calling you up, looking for money, that the scam level, aside from the news side of things, it has such potential to get massively out of hand incredibly quickly. So it'll be interesting to see where that proposed legislation goes. Of course, we will keep you up to date here on News Talk. And that's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. I'll be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's News Talk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.